gosh, there's no how-to on how to do this. It's very difficult.
Your partner has just died. The last thing on your mind is bills and bank accounts. If, like most couples, you have joint bank accounts and bills, not only will you have to organise the funeral in the days after death, but you'll probably also have to negotiate with financial institutions to get money.
We did have joint bank accounts for everything, so we were both signatories to everything. But as soon as the bank found out that he had died, they closed them. They stopped access because they had to have proof that he had died. So we had to wait for the death certificate. And then they had to know that I was able to access them, even though I was the breadwinner. I was the one who had a job. He'd been too ill to work. So they could see that every fortnight my pay came into that bank account, but they wouldn't let me access it. It was a complete and utter nightmare.
This is Judith Daly. Her husband, Bob, passed away 8 years ago. And despite being the breadwinner for the couple, she struggled to gain access to her bank accounts in the days following his death.
After I had to go through the rigmarole of, well, let's have a look at the account, and you can see that it's coming in as my pay into that account. So, therefore, I have got a right to spend that money, and I need to pay for his funeral. So I had to go through this whole rigmarole just so I could get enough money to pay for the funeral. Like, it was bizarre. And, of course, the funeral company are not going to let me have a funeral if I can't pay for it.
Judith's story is not an uncommon one, at least according to new research. Michelle DiGiacomo is a senior research fellow at the University of Technology, Sydney. Michelle has looked extensively at the health of recently widowed older women. Her most recent paper looked at how the financial burdens impacted the health of this group of women.
We heard a lot of stories about that from the women, the experiences they had in the period soon after the death of their partner, having to go to the different banks, let's say, or just notify different organizations of the death is very upsetting for some women. It was described as very upsetting by some of the women when maybe their interactions with those maybe bank or other industry representatives weren't as sensitive as they probably could have been. In the worst case, one of the women described that experience and interaction, series of interactions, as demoralizing. So she thought, you know, it was bad enough losing my husband, but to put me through all of this. So some of these experiences and interactions were rather prolonged, and that had an impact on their stress levels and hence their subsequent health.
This is in addition to the health effects already facing women following the death of a partner.
I guess what happens when a bereavement occurs, that is considered, you know, especially of a spouse, one of the most stressful life events you could possibly have. And there's research to show that through experiencing that stress of bereavement, there's a bit of wear and tear on the individual. Weathering, that's a term that's used quite a bit. And that can lead to some changes in biological circumstances. And it means that some people are more vulnerable to physiological changes and, you know, kind of an increase in exacerbations from chronic conditions or newly diagnosed chronic conditions. So that's what some of the research has shown, that women are particularly a little more vulnerable to that, those changes in physiological states than men in those early years following the death of a spouse.
The stress Judith faced trying to change her bank accounts while grieving for her husband compounded an existing lung condition.
My health is often a bit dodgy because, as I say, I've got these dodgy lungs because I'm an ex-smoker. I take medication all the time. If I get very tired, it very often results in a lung infection. So, you know, I wasn't able to sleep. I was overacting to everything. My health was pretty marginal.
In many cases, if your partner has previously managed the finances in the relationship, taking over that role can be daunting. Michelle DiGiacomo again.
Well, some of the women had already assumed a role within their households, managing some of the finances. But those who didn't have that experience, many of them found it quite a difficult time to, of course, be grieving, dealing with all these kind of administrative issues, and also to take on the responsibility of managing the couple's finances when they hadn't maybe done that at all before. So they're really faced with learning, a huge learning curve, really, but feeling overwhelmed by the amount that they didn't know and what they needed to know and what they needed to do to secure their future.
Judith had already been managing the household finances, but even she struggled with how to go about informing the relevant parties about her husband's death.
It's completely overwhelming, completely overwhelming. And I tried so hard to get coherent advice about the things I should be doing. I went to places like the public trustee, and I even contacted a lawyer, but unless you're, the lawyer was just going to be guessing as much as me. There's no written how-to that, of things you've got to check off. So you fumble your way through it. And sometimes you do the right thing and sometimes you do the wrong thing, so you've got to do it again.
Ian Yates is the chief executive of COTA Australia. For many couples, especially pensioners, the death of a partner means a change in their pension payments. From a policy point of view, this makes sense, but practically, if that partner is still living in the same family home with the same running cost, finances can take a hit.
On the income side, of course, if the couple are pensioners or even part pensioners, then there'll be a loss of some of that pension income as the surviving person will become a single pensioner. There's a brief transition period, but they become a single pensioner. So their income, not halved, but is significantly reduced, in fact, by about 40%. So that's an impact which can't necessarily just be compensated for fully in a hurry. In other words, they might still be living in the same house with the same running costs, and many of those things are not proportional, you know, they don't reduce just because one partner isn't there.
Mr. Yates says that the period after death is a delicate time, and widows, male or female, shouldn't make drastic changes while grieving.
Well, obviously, the death of a close partner, that is a really dramatic, one of life's biggest challenges. And one of the things that has to be said about that is that that means it's often important not to make rash decisions until you've, you know, perhaps absorbed the emotional impact to a degree, and then can think about some of the rational choices that you have to make about practical things. And in that respect, it's important to say that family members, particularly children, need to not try and rush the widow into making the decisions about the house and other arrangements unless there's an overriding reason for doing so. But to let people get used to the change in their life a little and then think about what they want to do next.
But what else can be done to ease the burden and subsequent health harms on the individual? Mr. Yates believes early planning is crucial.
The other thing that this points to, of course, is the need, really the need, for doing some advanced planning, making some preparations, finding out about how your finances work, doing the arrangements about funerals, in fact, doing arrangements about your medical directives and so on in advance as well. All of those things actually can help and make not the actual shock of losing a partner less, but make the attendant issues that can arise much easier to handle if you've thought about them, planned them together in advance.
Michelle DiGiocomo cites the British example, which streamlines the process of informing financial institutions.
So in the UK, for example, they have implemented in many places a tell us once type initiative where it's, again, it's like facilitating the notification of death, for example, to the many different organizations, government and non-government, that need to know about a death. So it's something that can ease the burden, the administrative type burden, on women when a spouse dies.
Judith has two solutions to the problem. Have your own account and develop a checklist.
I know every death is as unique as every person, but there are still huge similarities. So there should be some sort of checklist that consider this, consider that, you know, all those things. But none of that was available. So I suppose my warning to women in these, well, to everyone in these circumstances, is set up a small account just in your own name. So that I understand they've got to follow the law, but the law's ridiculous in those circumstances.